Let's head up the slope now and find out from Helen Walters just why the goat is dancing.
Oh, now there's a long story, which I can't really remember. Something about a goat herd on the Italian hills who accidentally dropped a few coffee beans into the goat's water, which was being warmed by the sun. And on drinking the water, the goats started to dance. I think that's the story. Yes, it's a really welcoming little cafe, we like to think, and we have a lot of very friendly regulars, and then people who come on holiday seem to like it too. So that's the dancing goat.
I come from Hungary, and I'm really used to nice espresso, you know, this real strong stuff. You don't think of England as the place for espresso, but it is. It's changed. I don't know if it's the low-cost flights or I don't know what it is, but English people seem to have quite a demand for espresso coffee, and the goat's coffee is very good.
My job is to make a lot of the cakes, so we try to use interesting recipes, seasonal produce, as much organic, locally sourced stuff as we can.
It's not the only place in Framlingham, but it's just a lovely environment as well, and pan chocolat is very good. They haven't got pogača yet, which is an excellent Hungarian savoury pastry thing and goes very well with espresso coffee. But I just love sitting here and seeing people, you know, coming and going, and everything is very good.
The Dancing Goat was the site for a Tudor grammar school. Next door today is the pharmacy, but that's only its most recent guise.
In all sorts of things, a vet's house, an eating house called the Two Pots. Can only guess what sort of Two Pots. It was that establishment, whatever it was, where the ladies of the street were making such a noise that there had to be legislation to stop them. But the effluent from that house was overflowing into the grammar school yard, and that's how one of the ways in which we can place the grammar school.
And now at the top of Market Hill is the famous Crown Hotel. Built in 1553, it was for many years a coaching inn on the arduous Ipswich-Norwich route. And here's the manager.
Well, if you look at my name over the door, it says Kevin Hunt, but for some obscure reason dating back to my childhood, I'm always called Roy. I think it's kind of a Roy Rogers thing. Looking on the bright side, of course, I could have been Trigger.
For most of its 4.5 centuries, though, Trigger, or any horse come to that, could ride straight from the Market Hill, through what's now the central facade of the Crown, and right out the other side, straight towards Ipswich. These days, though, Roy prefers us to use the door.
Most people would say that the Crown Hotel is probably the third most important building in Framlingham, after the castle and the church. It's a very difficult hotel to run because it has to be so many things to so many people. For example, Les comes in the morning for a cup of tea and a slice of toast with his dog, and he enjoys that very much, and he does that 5 days a week, and he's a very valued customer. Later in the day we'll have somebody in that wants a gastronomic feast and a luxury suite for the night with their new girlfriend or wife. And somewhere between the two we have to meet all of those needs, which does make things a little difficult.
There's a wonderful inventory for this pub in 1703 which describes the rooms in some detail. And on the first floor they have a suite of two or three really good bedrooms. The Rose Room, the Sun Room, and so on, and it looks as if they were really painted out to the highest standard, and it's that sort of detail which makes you think that the Crown was the leading inn for most of the time.
I mean, you just sit there and you look at those beams, you look at that interior, and you think this has been here for, I don't know, centuries and centuries. So, and then you look out on the Market Hill and yeah, it's a lovely, lovely way of spending a little time.
If you come in, we have a fairly unique service on offer here. We have a self-service coffee station where you can come up and have 2 cups of coffee for £1.30. Some people seem to sneak up and have 3, and I don't really have a big problem with that. Some people have 1 and come back the next day and say, can I have my 2nd cup? I didn't have it yesterday. And I quite like it because it puts a message out to our customers that they're both valued and trusted and they can pretty much do their own thing.
that's ridiculous.
Tennis genius Roger Federer is a great fan of the Crown.
Just glances over to Federer, just to see if he's walking on the court and not hovering above it.
Okay, that's a slight lie. He's never been here. But as Dr. Ridgard has discovered, the Crown was one of several establishments in Framlingham that Roger Federer would probably have enjoyed in the 16th century.
This place, the Crown, somewhere or other, I can't say exactly where, on the premises or even slightly outside, and probably the Griffin next door, both the proprietors were both fined for keeping illegal tennis yards. It's an illegal game. I think it's something to stop people associating, but it does flush out that that tennis was quite early well established in Framlingham.
Okay, well, we're now in Rubens Bar and Grill, which until March of this year was actually the old disused stable block, and as I understand it was disused since possibly sometime around the mid-30s. Like all disused stable blocks, it just became a junk store and was deteriorating rapidly. So having been here the 4 years that we have been here, we gave the matter a great deal of thought and felt that we would like to open a sizeable venue, which this town currently lacked, give it a separate identity to the hotel, to go for a much more modern feel. And what you see around you is what we think we've achieved. We think we achieved our goals quite nicely.
Time now to leave the Crown. If you want, we could pop into the Indian restaurant on the left, but our journey takes us to the right. And almost immediately you come to Off the Square.
I'm Chris Austin, General Manager at Off the Square Restaurant in Framlingham. We try and specialise in local organic produce, typically British food with a few French or Italian influences on most of the menus. The town really is bustling, and you sort of sit in our window and you've got probably the best view in Framlingham. You can see the castle and you can see the lovely church, so there's definitely worse places to sit and have a meal.
There are also two Chinese takeaways coming up. Framlingham has a long history of places to eat and drink.
The best list we've got of pubs in Fram dates to 1617, when they were the Cross Keys, the Swan, White Horse, White Lion, Bell, White Hart and the Bear. And missing from that are the Crown, which was certainly known as that by 1635 at the very, very latest, the Griffin next door, 1620, and the Dove, later the Hare and Hounds, now a private house at the top of Double Street. And that's just for starters. There were also eating houses. Some of them doubled up as brothels. Framlingham was a very lively place.
Everybody seemed to have drunk a lot. I think at one time there was 13 beer houses or pubs in Fram. That was really why there is in these little villages and market towns. People started libraries, they started workers' educational authority places, and little night schools, just to try to get people away from the pubs and give them something else to do. Otherwise, there was an awful lot of drunkenness.
So let's carry on our pleasant walk past St Michael's Church on the left. Do you see that majestic building with its bay windows, Regency House? Regency House is a private residence now, but this is where the local paper was printed for many years. And they display the exact issue from 100 years ago each week at the Landman Museum.
I never knew Framlingham had its own paper.
Well, it did.
One thing we're particularly proud of is the collection of Framlingham Weekly News. This was a weekly publication, starting about 1857, I think, through to about 1937.
It's a big newspaper. No, this is bigger than the Sun, and those are important.
Oh, the one of the great murder up at Pisen Hall is always great fun to read, but that's gone now. Things like the Bowls Club meeting, or apologies, or rows that people have obviously had across the newspaper locally. But no, it is just fun to see.
Thank you.
On the corner opposite the castle inn is a house allegedly built by the last bricks ever to be manufactured in Framlingham. Now it's home to a new enterprise.
Hello, I'm Hannah Norris and I am the owner of the Lion's Den in Castle Street in Framlingham. You'll have to come and have a look. I've got a mixture of old and new, but lots of lovely pieces, which you'll have to come and browse. I can see the gateway to the castle, people eating lots of yummy food from the castle pub and drinking beer, which is always a bit sad watching that, and the duck pond. And every now and then I see a lovely chap walking his Shetland pony and letting it graze there, which is always quite fun.
It's a touching image, isn't it? The little ducks on the pond. The problem is that it's not called the duck pond because of our avian friends. It's actually the ducking pond and was used for drowning witches.
The famous one was John Lowes, the parson of Brandeston, and at the time of the witch hunts and so on. And they brought John Lowes to Framlingham to duck him, because if you duck somebody or you threw them in the pond, they floated, they were guilty, and therefore they were hung. And if they sunk and drowned, they were innocent. So the problem was solved both ways. I think he'd been the vicar of Brandeston for a long while, and he'd probably got slightly eccentric, and I think they thought that was a way of perhaps getting rid of him.
Well, the castle pond, I remember it when it was a pond with a wall all the way around it, full of carp. And actually, I remember the day when the carp were all removed, and it got turned into what it is today. I can't remember fishing in it, but I know Graham King, who was the local watchmaker, I know he cleared all the carp out, and then it was filled in to make the smaller pond that it is today and the sitting area.
The town pond is actually part of this outer moat, and then it would empty itself just this the town side of the castle pub. So that's actually quite old, and it was rather unfortunately, I might say, modernised to make a memorial to Churchill when he died, and somebody gave us a considerable amount of money, and the castle pond was filled in to what it is today, which made it rather a cesspit for ducks. And it used to be, I remember, quite nice clear water, and there was roses over the brick walls, and people used to go down the steps and get their water from the pond. It was clean and spring fed.
Now for the feature Framlingham is most famous for, its castle. It was given to the Bigod family by Henry I, it seems, and is best known as the home of the Howard family, more commonly known as the Dukes of Norfolk. It was here that Mary Tudor learnt she'd become queen. Today, though, the queen of the castle is Diana Howard, although English Heritage prefers to call her the custodian.
It was built in 1190. It's a 12th century castle. It's a marvellous place. It's a complete curtain wall. And as you approach the main gate, the first thing to look at is the very top of the towers, and you'll see two square holes. And that shows you that we had a drawbridge here, and that's where the chain holes were.
Well, the present one is alleged to be 1190, and it did see military action in the rebellion against King John, 1215, 1220. And you do get a snapshot, because of the documents about that, of a garrison of perhaps about 90 men who lost to the royal forces and were forced into all sorts of humiliating surrenders and forfeits. It's interesting to see that the troops included people like doctors and so on. They were very, very well equipped.
Number on the keypad.
Yeah. Yep.
Followed by the green button.
Right.
Start with number one through the door.
Right.
Pop them round your neck so you don't have them.
Right, thank you very much.
They're well worth using, you'll enjoy it.
Okay, thank you.
All right.
There is an inventory of the castle, 1524, at the death of Thomas II Howard, Duke of Norfolk, which talks about gold-paned bedsteads and all sorts of things. It's no expense spared.
I don't have a favourite part. I think you've got to see it at every season, because the colours of the walls change. It's just a beautiful, beautiful place. You've got to spend a bit of time.
You walk through the gates now, and it's the empty space. You have to imagine that at the height of the Howard era, and maybe before that, as absolutely full, with two very small courts, front and back, with two very small courts, but the rest of it, accommodation blocks, kitchens, a whole range of rooms.
It's closes very early.
Anything else? What do you think of the walls?
The walls are quite good. You can go right round the walls. You can go right round outside the walls. You can go on top of the walls.
Health and safety would have an absolute field day with this. But when you used to go up there, there was no railings at all on the inside. So you just used to walk around, and if you decided to step back, you'd fall off. But I'm not aware that anyone ever did.
Yeah, I remember looking at the castle when I was at college, because it was far more interesting to look at that than it was to hear what I was being taught. And it was always scaffolding around it in those days. There isn't now. But no doubt the work is always ongoing.
College?
I saw a lake.
What's good about the lake?
It's big.
Now we're actually up on the castle wall, we can see over that lake, or rather the college mere, to Framlingham College. And there's probably students there today, just like Tony Martin all those years ago, looking back at us.
I'm Mark Robinson. I'm senior academic tutor at Framlingham College and also head of history. And I've been here for probably too many years to mention.
I'm Gwen Randall and I'm head of Framlingham College.
We're standing out at the front of the college. The college was built on an eminence in 1864-5. It's a mock Victorian pile, which is supposed to sort of carry shades of the great English public schools, Eton, Harrow, Winchester, etc. And it's supposed to also reflect the medievalismus from across the mere, which is the 12th century castle.
It was granted to us in 1864 by Pembroke College, Cambridge. Prince Albert visited Suffolk and felt that there wasn't a strong enough emphasis on education in the county. And when he died, the great and the good of Suffolk got together and they raised by public subscription the money to build the college, whose full title is the Albert Memorial Middle Class College.
Last summer, a Hungarian tourist friend of mine was looking at the rather Gothic building of the college from across the mere. "Jaj Istenem," she said, "es tiste Harry Potter," which, roughly translated, means, "Goodness gracious me, that is pure Harry Potter."
Yeah, it's either that or the Munsters. There are a lot of sort of Gothic twists and turns, gargoyles, sort of austere towers, that kind of thing. And I think probably originally in Victorian times it was a pretty serious institution, all boys. One of its greatest characteristics was apparently that each boy has a separate bed. That was the big selling point in 1864 when they were trying to drum up custom.
We are very much part of the town. We're the biggest employer, and our students have quite a lot to do really with the town, and I'm very proud of the fact that our students get involved in volunteer work of all sorts.
We're now sort of approaching the front of the college, and we see again this sort of we see a medieval coat of arms, and as we go through the threshold of the main door we have the college motto, Studio Sapientia Crescit, which means through enthusiasm or zeal, wisdom grows. Again, this is something of a con. We're talking about a 19th century construction designed to conjure up images of the great public schools and also of the great Cambridge University colleges. And that's why we're hit immediately by this sort of onslaught of oak panelling.
You know, as far as boarding schools go, you have your ups and downs, and being a teenager, it's, you know, sort of you have lots of very emotional and hormonal moments, but it was a, you know, very comfortable school. You know, it was generally a good place to go. Very fortunate to have gone there.
The idea of what's going on here is that we tried to sort of set up some kind of meaningful pictorial contrast between the past and the present. So if we look at the first of them, we've got sort of, you know, the school in 1912 with a lot of incredible matronly figures and what are described as ghosts in the windows. They're actually some of the maids.
I had my 10th birthday there in the sanatorium. I remember my mother coming over and giving me a dinky toy, which I've still got. And I had a year there, and then I went to Brandeston when that opened, and that was much happier. And then I came back to Framlingham when I was 13. And I wasn't very bright at school, didn't pass many exams. But nevertheless, I support the school now. I think it's a good establishment. I think they turn out good kids, which I think is probably more important.
This picture is unbelievable. Talk about political incorrectness encapsulated in one moment in time. We're looking at a pre-war speech day in the dining hall where the headmaster and governors are sitting at the front of the hall, and behind them you have just a vast array of antelope's heads and water buffalo heads, and basically they look very similar to the characters who are standing on the podium delivering the speeches.
There's a problem with the beautiful site of the college because it looks as if it's snootily stuck on top of the hill looking down on the town. That does not represent our attitude. We're part of the town and we want to be a key player within it.
Returning back to the castle wall, can you see the bowling green? It's sandwiched between the castle and the English Heritage car park.
My grandfather's very keen on Framlingham, and I told you before he was born here, and his father was a member of the bowls club. And the two important sort of groups of people where the policy of the town was perhaps formulated before the town council was formed in the 1890s were the Freemasons and the bowls club. My great-grandfather got himself to be a member of both those as soon as he could, and he got on very well because that helped him, put it that way.
We think that this bowling green is possibly one of the oldest in the country and therefore in the world. This green is an excellent green. People from all over the county and all, you know, from wider afield all want to come and play here because of the playing surface, and of course the environment of the castle lends extra to that as well.
That was Terry Gilder, the president of the Bowls Club. Time to press on with our journey. So let's descend the rickety stairs, passing by the door of the Lammer Museum, through the hall with its early Framlingham fire engine, under the arch and over the bridge towards the town. For people like local boy John Bridges, the Castle Meadow is synonymous with the annual gala.
As young lads, the coming of the gala every Whit Monday was the highlight of the year, with Bert Stocks' fun fair. I mean, you just never saw anything like that. It was the opportunity to just, well, you're just mesmerised by everything that went on there.
The Castle Inn on the right is the fifth pub we've passed, the sixth if you include the Crown Hotel, but we're not going to be tempted by Framlingham traditions. So left it is and into Castle Street.